How's it going, folks? Ice H Farmer here, here to answer your questions about how to survive and thrive in the coming times ahead. The Grand School Minimum is upon us, and there are lots of things that we need to quickly teach ourselves if we expect to prosper in the times ahead and ensure our family's food security. So let's go ahead and talk about that. Today I am adding a second level to my moringas. So I've got one stall that's for full length, full height moringas, and then I'm doubling down on the sides where they're still smaller ones, so I'll be able to double on that pipeline. It's good stuff back there. I really enjoy those moringas. The tender buds are fresh and tasty and are nutritional whoppers, as we'll talk about today, actually. That's what I'm doing today in my step towards self-sufficiency. What are you doing? Tell me below, what is it that you're working on? Because we all need to be taking steps towards self-sufficiency so that we'll be positioned to prosper in the grand solar minimum. We know that these changes are coming our way. We are witnessing already the collapse of agricultural systems, and we need to be preparing and positioning ourselves as we see Jeff Bezos and Eric Schmidt heavily investing, pouring their money into vertical farming startups that are, just as they are positioning themselves to benefit from the collapse of agriculture, so too should we be positioning ourselves minimally to ensure our food security in those times ahead. So tell me, what are you doing? And let's hold each other accountable. Let's form this community of people that are actively working towards solutions so that we aren't fully dependent on their vertical farms as we are increasingly dependent on their systems today. All right, so here at our, as far as our focus on how to prosper in the grand solar minimum, there are many very real challenges that we're pretty well acquainted with by now, thanks to the hard work of the researchers on other channels. We're familiar with all the problems we need to overcome. And equally, we stand on the shoulders of giants in terms of finding solutions from other inspired folks. You know, in the realm of aquaponics, Murray Hallam has done a lifetime of research, and you can find tons of videos from him on YouTube. So the channel from Growing Your Greens has a lot of information on gardening and doing so in containers, even some aquaponics. There are just, there are too many to name. I do a disservice by mentioning any, because there are so many, there's such a great body of work, not just on YouTube, obviously, but elsewhere and in your library that we can tap into. And we stand as the folks who are having the conversation and starting the conversation of how we can prepare our families for the grand solar minimum and how to ensure we're able to deal with the crop losses and the rise in food prices and perhaps inavailability of food in the stores. We stand positioned uniquely to go and find people who have done aquaponics and who have done buildings that are climate batteries, permaculture approaches to storing the heat during the day and then putting it out during the night, in the earth ships and the compost. There are so many realms here to tap into that that it's a fun puzzle, and we just need to appreciate that as best we can, in spite of the fact that these are tremendously real problems that we need to overcome, and start building a comprehensive solution. And it's obviously, as with any permaculture approach, it is going with the way your land or your position. So if you're in the city, it's going to be on your rooftop. You know, these philosophies apply to any situation, and it's these core philosophies that we really need to master and understand and share right now. All right, so let's go ahead and go to a question. This first question is from Bananas, and thank you for the question. The question is this. The question revolves around the reality that hydroponics depends on chemicals, nutrients that you're adding to your solution, topping off and then emptying out every once in a while to keep salt and things from building up. So you need to have these chemicals on hand, and they don't store forever, and you can't store an infinite supply because you have physical space restrictions. So what's the deal? And yeah, I mean, this is a very valid reason why hydroponics is not a long-term self-sufficient strategy for food production. It is something that's worth, I think, understanding, because aquaponics is built, it is both the portmanteau of hydroponics and aquaculture, and it is literally conceptually a marriage between these two things. So hydroponics is something that's important to understand, and you kind of do understand just by nature of being an aquaponician. And that's sort of the reality there. Let's talk about the same, let's ask the same question of aquaponics. As he points out with aquaponics, you need to have pH test strips and or little chemicals that you use to test the pH and other levels. These things, and I sort of want to stress something here. When you're setting up a tank and getting used to running your system and having it, you know, understanding what it means to have a tank cycling and getting your levels in check, then that is sort of true. You're going to need to keep an eye really closely on these parameters, and that requires some infrastructure. Once you have your tank running, and if you've got this thing running for a year or two, then you just you intimately are familiar with the operations of your system, with the way the water looks and the fish look and the plants look in any number of different situations, which you had over the last year or two had then when you noticed something was off to test for, and so you've mapped it to the actual underlying condition. But that's, I keep stressing this, that is why we need to start growing our food now, today, because it takes practice. It takes capital and setup and materials that may or may not continue to be available. So we need to set up this this infrastructure that we need to ensure our food security in the times ahead now, and get good at it so we know how to operate it under any number of circumstances. Look, especially if the climate continues to offer new challenges and who knows what else ahead of us, then we should have as firmly established our baseline understandings of we should really nail the ability to feed our families now, so that as these challenges continue to arise, we'll be able to rise to meet them. Because if we expect to wait until the last second when this food is gone out of the stores to then start learning how to create the food, we're in a world of hurt, folks. And so let's start looking at these things today. I like this question. How is this really a self-sufficient food production methodology? And I want to extend it to the spirulina. So the spirulina did require a ton of chemicals to set up, a lot of baking soda and a lot of saltpeter. Now, there are different ways to set up a culture of spirulina. There is a very precise, I've got the recipe that I used on my website. I've tried a few different ones now. The one that's still over here brewing well for me is on my website. And it does use all food grade USPA chemicals. There are recipes where it's appropriate, i.e. in a survival situation, which is sort of what we're exploring here, where you depart from using food grade chemicals. In fact, everything that you need to feed a spirulina, to grow spirulina algae, nitrogen, phosphate, sulfate, sodium, potassium, magnesium, all of these things can be found in human urine. And it's not the best idea to start up a new tank using urine, because the pH is still at a relatively neutral level, and urine is a very rich place for anything to grow. It's got all those nutrients in it, like we just said. So when the pH hasn't yet climbed up to where the spirulina can really flourish and everything else can't, then it's not ideal to add urine. Once you're up there, then it is true that you can keep your spirulina culture running off of urine. Here, I'm just going to echo this. Here is another reason to set up your production today, because you could maintain it using less than ideal nutrients going forward, but you'll need to have grown it successfully and have a healthy culture. And if we're talking about using urine, then it's worth saying we need to be healthy as well. We can't be taking drugs or doing, you know, whatever. We have to have clean urine. There was a study, and I was going to reference this. If I'll find it, I will, basically asking the question, can human urine be used effectively as a nutrient and as a fertilizer in the garden? And the answer is a very clear yes, qualified only by the idea that if we are not, you know, if we're on pharmaceuticals or anything like that, then obviously that's coming out of us and that's not good for your garden. If you have a high salt diet, well, that's going to build up in your soil, and obviously pouring salt on your plants is not good for them. So that's why, you know, initially it's just like horrifying or shocking to think, why would I pee on some of my plants at least? If salt's in your diet to stay, then there are some more salt tolerant crops that even then you can probably have your way with them. But there are folks, there's at least one guy out there who I really admire, because he just made the hard stop. I'm going to stop eating all salt in my diet. I'm going to go totally low salt, and that way I can be my own fertilizer. Whatever your spiritual practice may be, when I've done mine recently, the answers are you need to master yourself before you expect to master your self-sufficiency. And I think this speaks to that. What inputs to my system can come from me? Because we have been so conditioned to throw anything that comes out of our body into a Kleenex or a wrapper or whatever and get it away from us and flush it down the toilet with a ton of clean water, that these things, that we don't even question them anymore. And this is an opportune time to realize that we, you know, drink from thine own cistern, as the Bible says, right? We have sources of these things on us, just like the aquaponics does for fish. And it's only because we haven't yet adjusted our mindset to put ourselves in the system and then made sure that our diets are clean enough to be a part of that system, that we haven't made that connection yet. And actually adjusting our diet is another part of the equation, where if you're trying to think, how can I be self-sufficient, but you're eating Big Macs, you can't. You can't. You need a job to make the money to pay McDonald's to get the Big Macs. It's just the reality of the situation. So if you're in that kind of a place and you ask, it doesn't work, I become self-sufficient, you're right. Because you have to change what you're doing. You have to change your diet into a healthy living greens, and those you can grow, and then we're on the right track. So the change that has to happen here isn't just where are you getting your food, it's what are you eating and how do you approach these things. It's a bigger change to get where we're trying to go. So know thyself. Know your own inputs and your own outputs, just like any other part of your system. It's just the reality of it now. First thing that I noticed in the Grand Solar Minimum related events of this week was a report out of Moscow that Moscowites are suffering in mass, that actually additional psychological resources are needed as relief because of a preponderance of people suffering from seasonal affective disorder, or SAD, SAD, ironically. So folks, basically, SAD happens when you don't get enough sunlight and it's too dark. I think there's just a dark and rainy psychological component to it, as well as a physiological, if you look into it, deficiency of vitamin D. And omega-3s play into it. So there are nutritional, what that means is there are nutritional ways to support yourself through a winter, a dark, especially long, dark winter, that folks in, you know, historically, that folks in far northern climates like Alaska would do to complement their setup. You know, they've got shutout curtains and stuff like that for when the light is extensive during the summer, so they can still get normal sleep cycles in at night. And again, in the longer winters, when it gets dark for 23 and a half hours a day, then they actually have lights, special lights that they can supplement their lighting with, and should probably consider supporting themselves nutritionally. Now, I don't think that's going to be as severe, even in the Grand Solar Minimum. I don't think we need to worry about, you know, special lights to make ourselves feel better. But it does make sense to consider those what are the nutritional requirements for supporting seasonal affective disorder, because if we're in a situation where we don't have those nutrients, then it will be exaggerated, and if there is a very real lack of sunlight causing a lack of vitamin D from that alone, then we would need to think about what are our sources, where are we going to get it. And milk is not always the easiest answer. It takes 40-80 acres for you know, 5 to 10 head of cattle, which is like the minimum, you know. So that's a 40-80 acre, and having cattle is a commitment that most of us can't make just so we can become self-sufficient on vitamin D. So what are some other ways we can get there? All right, so interesting, one of the best sources that we can grow ourselves of vitamin D is mushrooms. Oyster mushrooms, in fact, have a good amount of vitamin D per serving and are relatively easy to grow. I've got a video series on those. There are other reasons, including medicinal ones, to grow mushrooms, but vitamin D in this particular perspective here today, for avoiding seasonal affective disorder and supporting yourself nutritionally through that, they're a clear win. Also, omega-3 is something that will alleviate the body's response to a lack of sunlight and a lack of seasonal input. And omega-3 is very rich in both spirulina and in the moringa that we're growing, so this contributes to the long lists of reasons that these turn out to be some of the most nutritionally inclusive and hence power effective things to grow in your small growing space that is going to take your family through the times ahead. So yet another reason you can add to the list of moringa and spirulina as some of the best batteries of nutrition for the time ahead. All right, thanks for watching. I hope you got something out of this. Let me know if you like this new format of sort of a podcast talking about how to synthesize solutions from all walks of life. into something that is actually focused on the grants from the minimum, because that is something that I can't find anywhere else. And I can blab on about other things, but there are people who are really good at those things doing that. And so I think that's the value I can bring here. So again, reach out with your questions. If you're an expert in whatever, something that we can bring into this community so we can synthesize solutions for the grants or the minimum and make sure that all of us together are able to prosper in the times ahead, reach out to me, iceagefarmer@gmail.com. Let's start this conversation now. And I hope you have started growing your own food already. If not, do it today. Take care.